Hello, I am Mahendra Gupte. Let's look at Chapter 3, International Contracts. The overseas market, global expansion as growth strategy, market entry via offices, plants, partnerships, drivers, saturation, market gaps, technology, benefits, revenue growth, and diversification. So let's first understand, before we get into international contracts, the purpose or the reasons that a company is trying to look at an overseas market. First point is global expansion as a growth strategy. You want better, bigger markets because you have saturated the local or the domestic market and you are now wanting to get into exports. Of course, the prerequisite would be that your quality of your product or your offering is such that it will be easily accepted in terms of quality in the external market. Market entry via offices, plants, or partnerships. We looked at this earlier in the earlier chapter as to how does a company get into an overseas market, whether it gets into a subsidiary office, whether it would like to give a partner there its licensing rights, its franchising rights, or whether they would like to get into a partnership or start a joint venture and get into a manufacturing plant, whether joint or 100% subsidiary again. What are the drivers for such a situation or such entry as well as expansion into an overseas market? As I said, saturation in the domestic market, there are market gaps and technology. So, which means that there are gaps in the market, in the domestic market or the overseas market rather, and you would like to fill those gaps in with your product. At the same time, you are able to use, when if you start manufacturing in this overseas market, you are able to take advantage of technology which is available there and then use that same technology for your domestic market or your manufacturing in the original company or the original plant. What are the benefits? Revenue growth, definitely. Diversification. In fact, when companies look at exports, the bigger advantage than revenue growth is the diversification. The reason being that now the company does not depend on just the domestic market and its competitors and changes happening in the domestic market. Rather, it now has a focus on the export market and the region and countries around that export market. Drivers for global expansion, local market limitations, foreign market potential, environmental and technological factors. So, what are the main drivers for getting into global expansion? Is again, local market limitations, or you have more or less exhausted the market in the domestic country. You are looking at the foreign market as a potential for growth, for revenue growth, for sales growth, for volume growth, etc. Environmental and technological factors. You are wanting to get into a overseas market because your products or your processes which you have established are environmentally and technologically much better, or you are able to use advantages of the technology that is available in the overseas market for your own benefits. Let's look at the benefits of international markets. Stakeholder proximity, revenue diversification, cost reduction, global brand image, and increased competitiveness. Let's understand each of these points. Stakeholder proximity is, let's say, even if you enter an overseas market through the distribution channel, now the distributor as well as the customers are in close proximity, and the distributor on your behalf answers or rather supports the customer in the best way possible. Revenue diversification, that is for you as a exporter. You now have got different sources of revenue, the overseas market as well as the domestic market. Cost reduction, this would come in actually when you are either manufacturing in that country or you are able to manufacture your product so competitively that you are able to avail of cost reduction in the overseas market. Global brand image, your quality, your brand has a very strong image in the country, in your domestic country, and now you want to extend that same brand image globally. So this is where you start building up the brand in the overseas market. But of course, the reason for entry to that export overseas market would be the fact that your brand is being recognized or has been accepted in bits and pieces by the general public in that market. Increased competitiveness, every component, every manufacturer, wherever he may be in the world, whatever he produces for domestic consumption needs to be tweaked, needs to be improved, needs to be enhanced to meet the requirements of customers in another market. Whether it is overseas or whether it is regionally different, you will need to make changes in the product. That is how you would also become more competitive, because now you are not, whenever you are making an entry into an overseas market, you are not only looking at selling your product to that market, but you are also trying to see how your product stands with respect to your competitors. Establishing overseas presence. Strategic planning is essential, market assessment, entry strategy selection, and resource allocation. So, the most important part of establishing an overseas presence is has your management decided strategically, what have they planned, and how do you want to enter that market? What is going to be the time frame that you're looking at that market for? What is going to be your gestation period? That means, what is that time period which you would permit that business to keep growing or keep taking shape, and then take a call as to how you want to go to the next step of growth there. Market assessment, before you even think of any strategy or decide any market, you would have to take a market assessment, research that market with respect to wants, needs, and how easy or how difficult it would be to sell your product or market your product in that region or market, overseas country. Entry strategy selection, once you've decided your market, your target market, as well as you have decided the strategy that you want to get in plan, that means how long you want to be explore that market is when you decide the strategy that you would like to get into. Maybe companies would like to go progressively, that is, use an agent first, then move to a distribution level, then move to a marketing subsidiary, and then eventually get into a joint venture. Well, all this could happen right from the time that you have a distributor in place and use the distributor as your local partner to enter. Resource allocation. This is also a point which needs to be decided by management right at the strategic planning level itself, because that will decide how long you are going to be in that market, what are the kind of expenses you are ready to incur, as well as the manpower that you are able to spare from your current operations, because you may recruit locally, but you would need somebody who is managing that entire business from your current team. Market entry strategies, we are just summarizing them, or rather recalling them again. Franchising, where you are giving them a bundle of products, IP rights for a bundle of products. Licensing is where you give the IP rights for just one product or just one family. Joint ventures, where you open a setup, whatever it is, whether it's a marketing or a manufacturing, on a joint partnership basis. Direct exporting is where you look at a distributor there or a customer there and directly export to him. Greenfield investment, where you get into a company and look at setting up right from scratch. That means you just get bare land from the government and you build your own factory there. Or you would look at an old company that is already in the same line of business but is not really wanting to continue for whatever reasons, and you can take over that company. That is company acquisition. International and local regulations, customs regulations, trade agreements, product safety standards, intellectual property rights, employment and tax laws. Customs regulations, definitely the exporting customs from the exporting country as well as the customs of the importing country. This is the first step that you need to clarify and understand the kind of duties, tariffs, etc. that would be regulated as well as the processes to be followed for the customs at exports as well as import into the overseas market. Trade agreements. Does the government of your country have and has any trade agreement with the importing country? If so, you should use that to your benefit and see how you can further use that trade agreement in your expansion of business. Product safety standards. If your product, whatever it may be, is to be sold into an overseas market, try and understand what your competitors are doing there, what are the safety standards that that country requires, and accordingly change your product or modify your product to ensure that it complies to the safety standards there. Intellectual property rights. You may go in there with a new product which needs to be intellectual property right protection, and then you may have to apply for protection there in that overseas market itself so that there is no violation of your property, intellectual property rights. Employment and tax laws. Understand what are the employment laws and the taxations and the other laws that govern employment as well as expansion for your operations in the overseas market. How do you navigate through those regulations? You need to do a lot of market research, understand the market in and out completely, understand the legal aspects and take legal consultation, licenses and permits, compliance monitoring. Market research is what you would have to do extensively, and that is why when companies who want to actually get into overseas markets look at a market research and overseas market decision to be anything between 12 to 18 months. That is the kind of time period that is required for market research as well as to understand what kind of end market entries you would like to get into, what are the rules and regulations there, how are you going to manage your resources to be employed there in that market. At the same time, part of that market research and decision making would be the legal consultation to understand the laws there in that country, the laws not only with respect to operations, with respect to transportation of goods, with respect to employment of people, with respect to benefits for those employees, with respect to the working times, the kind of restrictions or constraints or challenges that one is likely to face. Then you would require certain amount of licenses and permits. One is the export license to start with, the import license in the importing country, and all the other permits to make your factory actually work or your business actually survive there. Compliance monitoring. Once you've got the licenses and permits, there would be compliance that you need to ensure on a regular basis, which is ongoing for almost all businesses. What is the legal framework that you need to understand there? What is common law versus civil law? Local legal systems, treaties and agreements, ethical compliance. Common law versus civil law. That means what are the laws that govern different. Every country has a different set of legal frameworks. One where there are certain labor issues, labor laws which are different. They are tried in different courts. There are different processes to go through labor laws. As well as if you have some other issues, that is the civil law with respect to land, property, all those areas are differently tackled in different frameworks. So you must understand what is the legal framework that you are getting into in that overseas market. Local legal systems, there would be locally legal systems itself. Just to give you an example, the laws in a lot many of the states in the United States of America are different for different purposes. For example, even the family laws with respect to children, with respect to families, with respect to divorce, all these are different. Treaties and agreements. There would be different treaties and agreements with respect to that country, with respect to how you go about trying to sign an agreement in a country with your supplier, with your distributor, etc. Like, for example, many a times it is said that if you sign an import agreement with one customer in the European Union, whether you write the area or the scope for his operation or no, he is open to sell your product or represent your product in the entire European Union. Ethical compliance. What are the ethical requirements that you need to comply to in that country? You may be at the highest ethical standards in your country, but are they good enough for the overseas market, or is it the other way around, where your ethical compliance is extremely strong in terms of what are the ethical practices there? Anyway, if you have to survive, you may have to look at those and then decide what is going to be your process forward. Cultural and language differences, communication styles, business etiquette, negotiation styles, organizational hierarchy. Communication styles, definitely a lot many countries, especially in Europe or otherwise, follow a strict office time communication. That means you cannot communicate to them on a Saturday, Sunday. You cannot communicate with them after office hours, because, well, you can send your email or your message, but it will get replied only in office hours the next working day. Business etiquette. A lot many of companies and countries have got certain business etiquettes in terms of, if you are meeting anybody at a higher level in a company, maybe your supplier or your customer, you would have to be dressed in a certain way. This is just a very small basic example, but that's to give you an idea of business etiquette. Negotiation styles. A lot many companies or countries follow certain styles. That means once somebody has given you a written document, there is no question of negotiating further on that, if it's an official document which is signed and on the letterhead of a company. Now, all the negotiation in such a situation takes place verbally or rough on a paper without any signatures, without any letterheads, without any actual representation on paper for the companies. Organizational hierarchy. A lot many companies or countries consider the post of a manager to be as good as the general manager for that business. Now, this is something that we need to understand, especially the way the hierarchy is, organizational hierarchy is in our country. A lot many countries have got flat structures, and once they see your designation to be manager, it implies that you are the whole and soul of that business. Whenever your designation says general manager, it means you are actually the owner. This is very true in businesses or suppliers if you have any in China. Risks in international markets, political instability, economic volatility, currency risks, market competition, and IP protection. Political instability, well, today government is in place, tomorrow it gets thrown over, you would be in trouble, your business could be in trouble, there would be a question of law and order, and all that is what you need to consider. So businesses would want to keep away from such markets or such countries which are politically unstable. Economic volatility. While the government may be stable, the economy of the country is not really being looked at, and it is extremely volatile. In such a situation, you would also want to consider or keep away from such a market. Currency risks. Linked to the economic volatility is the currency risks also. Because if your economy is not very good in shape, then the currency is not going to be either, which means that while imports could be advantageous, exports could be difficult. Depends on how the currency is going to act or rise or lower in that market. Market competition. What is happening with the competitors? What are the practices that those competitors have in place? And how do you want to cope up with that competition in that market? And last but not the least, your intellectual property needs to be, property rights need to be protected. How do you mitigate such risks? What are the risk mitigation strategies? Political and economic assessment, diversification, legal safeguards, local partnerships. Political and economic assessment is where, as I said, that research of a market requires 12 to 18 months for a final decision to be taken, may take even longer, is where you are trying to assess what is the political and the economic risk that you would like to look at and how would you like to mitigate it. Diversification, you may want to get into a business in one country. Does the neighboring country also support you? Maybe you could look at partially moving part of your operations to the neighboring country, which is much more stable than the one you are actually looking at. The reason you are looking at that market initially is because of the higher potential. But then that higher potential or high business growth cannot be at the risk of the business itself. Legal safeguards, you'll have to look at how you are able to safeguard yourself in terms of any legal complications or the law in that country. And one of the options would be having a local partner who can handle the local issues and keep you protected from whatever are the repercussions. International contracts, what are the elements of an international contract? An offer and acceptance, consideration, mutual obligation, competency and capacity. Offer and acceptance, we all understand that there is somebody who one party makes an offer, and unless there is an acceptance by the other, the contract is invalid. The contract is only one-sided. There has to be an offer and there has to be an acceptance. This is the very basis for any contract, whether it is local, domestic or international. Consideration here means the benefit or the monetary benefit or otherwise that is passed on from the offer and accepted by the other party in terms of for doing something or for not doing something. So maybe, for example, when a distributor represents a manufacturer in a country, he is compensated. The consideration here would be the sale of goods to him, and he is permitted to sell those products at the required market prices in his market. That would be the consideration part of it. Mutual obligation. Mutual obligation is now the binding part to both the seller and the acceptor or the buyer, which means that the person who made the offer and the person who accepted it have a mutual obligation for whatever are the contents or the agreement that was or the contract that was made for the business. Competency and capacity. You will always get into a partnership or sign a contract with a party who is competent to take care of your products to meet the purpose that you are looking for in that market. And capacity. And they are financial, not only financially, but also have the infrastructure, the manpower, and the technical inputs required in terms of capacity for meeting their part of the mutual obligation of the contract. What are the key clauses in an international contract? Scope and territory, term and termination, choice of law and forum, force majeure, arbitration and mediation. Scope and territory, you would always want to decide or specify what is the scope. That means the kind of products that you would want that company or that party to look at or represent you for, and the territory boundaries. That means you want them to look at, represent you in India, in the neighboring countries, or the other way around. When you are an exporter from India, you would like to, let's say if the company is in Dubai, that company is supposed to look at the entire GCC, the entire Middle East and North Africa, whatever is the territory that you would like to offer them. Term and termination, You would want to know how long the contract is for what term, and how does it get terminated, as well as how does it get renewed. So the term specifies 2 years, let's say, and will be renewed after 2 years on mutual agreement by both parties. Or there could be a condition that it will be renewed subject to a certain volume of sales happening over a period of time. Termination is where, if either of these conditions are not met, the contract would stand terminated. At the same time, either of the parties could terminate the contract with a prior notice or other terms and conditions that are specified. Choice of law and forum. If there is any dispute between the two parties who have signed the contract, what is the law, which country law would apply, and where would the case be represented in which court? Force majeure means nothing else but natural disasters or acts of God, which means that any natural disasters like floods, storms, cyclones, earthquakes, etc., that would happen, which would safeguard both the company, both the partners in that partnership, in that agreement, at the same time the business, and take a proper cognizance of what the damages are and how to come out of it. Arbitration and mediation. This is a clause where mediation is the first step, where two companies, two parties, when they have a dispute, they would look at an amicable settlement is when they would get into a mediation. That means a third party listens to both their issues and then suggests the best solution forward. Arbitration is the next step, where it is actually a court proceeding, but outside court, where an appointed arbitrator takes over, listens to both the parties with his knowledge, with his technical knowledge, with his knowledge of the market, with his knowledge of the industry and the business, comes up with a solution and a go in between. So this solution can be enforced through court, but it saves both the companies the issue of getting publicized because they have gone to court. So a mediation is the first step, arbitration is the next. Let's summarize. International expansion offers growth, requires regulatory and legal compliance, cultural awareness is critical, and contracts protect business interests. So yes, international expansion does offer growth in terms of markets, in products, competitiveness, everything. Requires regulatory and legal compliance. You cannot sell in any market, or rather, for example, even export a piece of your product unless you have complied to the regulatory requirements as well as the legal compliance. Cultural awareness is critical. Yes, in the overseas market, you must know what is the culture in that market and how you can get over it. Contracts protect business interests. Yes, contracts are the protection for business between the two parties, and the compliance to that contract is mutually agreed to, and hence the business moves forward. Thank you.